So this is actually a highly controversial passage. There's probably very few passages in the New Testament that have been more argued about. So let's put a couple things out of the way so we can say what I think we need to say this morning. That Jesus is not here starting a papacy, though I am not a Catholic basher. And he doesn't have in mind here an institution. But institutions are not bad things. We tend to think of institutionalism automatically as a bad thing, but the root of the word institution is situated. And anything of any importance has to be situated in public for it to have its effect. What good would a university be that wasn't situated in public? Well, then it's automatically an institution. What good would a hospital be if it wasn't situated up here on the hill like Hogue is? So anything to have its effect or its life in public has to be situated in public, and that's what it means to be an institution. Those aren't bad things. It's just not what Jesus has in mind. So Jesus isn't starting an argument here about the papacy, and he's not starting an argument here about religious institutionalization. He doesn't have a world religion in mind either, but right religion is an okay thing. What Jesus has in mind is a community of people. And this is why when we celebrate this morning, we don't celebrate, you know, primarily about numbers or even time. I mean, we note the time, 5th anniversary, but that's not what we celebrate. What we celebrate is the work of God in us as represented by John and Jenna and Ryan and Kelsey, that Jesus is building a community of people who are highly specific. And here's the specificity. They give full allegiance to Jesus and his kingdom. That's the intention of Jesus in this passage. Whatever else religious historians and theologians and biblical scholars have done with it, and like I said, there's been a lot of ink spilled over that passage. If you just try to think, to what was Jesus conscious when he uttered those words? Like a moment ago, I said, Ryan and Kelsey, could you come up? To what was I conscious when I said that? And what was my intention? You need to read Jesus just that simply. To what was he conscious? What were his aims in saying those words? And his aims were to create a particular kind of community, a new community. Now we could maybe say more precisely a renewed, a reconstituted community. But a community that was highly specific in that it was marked out by full allegiance to him and to the way he explained in his teaching and embodied in his way of being and demonstrated in his deeds of power the gospel of the kingdom of God. That's what he's doing. He's saying, I want to shape here a group of people. And so this morning, I just want to take a very brief moment to explore Jesus' intention to have a community of cooperative friends and just wonder together with you for a moment about how we might join that movement. So if you look at your text, there's these, you know, very famous five words, I will build my church. So this just simply signifies, again, a specificity that it's who's saying this? Well, it's the world's one true Lord, not someone merely conceived in a womb, not a God that was made of human hands, but the world's one true Lord. And so you can trust this saying and you can trust my intentions. And then what's he going to do? I will build. And that is to say that what Jesus is saying here in the kind of all the nuances of this word is something like this, that I am now coming to bring to pass what God intended from what we've been reading in Genesis with Abraham. And so I'm going to restore, rebuild, and repair. I'm going to found and establish this reconstituted people of God. Well, what are they? Well, then there's this personal pronoun. They're mine. And in the Greek, the position of this word my is in the emphatic position, and it means to say this is a messianic community. This is not a community marked by what the options were for Israel at the time. And there were plenty of options. You could have joined the Qumran sect. You could have joined the Herodians. You might have joined the Zealots. You could have become a Pharisee or a Sadducee. But Jesus is, again, particulating. He is saying, no, this is a messianic community, and it's built through the work of the first apostles. And I think that we're called to be a link in this chain. So like if you were to ask me, so Todd, what What is it that got you out of bed at 6:30 this morning and at the storage unit by 6:45 to get everything set up for church? Or if you were to say to me, you know, Todd, shouldn't you have a real life by now? Like, why is a 58-year-old guy starting a new church? Like, shouldn't you have had a stable career by now? Like, you know, what are you doing? I believe this is really important, big stuff. And I think we're just supposed to be one humble little link in this chain that says Jesus is building his church. And in an era in which the church is increasingly marginalized in polite society, and in an era where in some elitist and atheistic realms the church is actually hated and seen as to be a problem in the world, well, somebody has to find a way to stand in that. And I think that, of course, every church, I hope, is trying to do that. And I think we have this particular calling to begin in these next 5 years, having learned to be Anglican, having learned the language and the cadences, as Jenna was saying, of seeking our own transformation into Christ-likeness, that is going to turn evangelistic. Because, now this is me as professor of evangelism standing here at Vanguard, where I teach a course on evangelism, so you just trust me on this. That the number one reason that people say that they're not interested in coming to faith today is the unchristian lives of Christians. So we're not seeking inner transformation out of some sort of need for personal piety or the kind of navel-gazing critiques you hear. We are trying to become the people of God, this highly particular messianic community. Well, what about the parts of you that are not very messianic inclined? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about the part of you that still actually, you don't just hate your neighbor, you are your enemy, you relish hating your enemy. You don't even intend yet to stop hating your enemy. What are we going to do about these things? These things are real about us. And people see it. They know it. And so what we're going to do is we are going to try to learn to do and be as Jesus taught was best. So we're going to try to become the kind of people who from a genuine heart love our enemies. And we positively will the good of our neighbors. And we seek to exist for their good, those sorts of things. That it would have an evangelistic impact in the years to come, as the world is going to see that there is nothing powerful or magical in secularism, and they will begin to turn back. So what is it that Jesus is building? He's building a church, an ekklesia. And ekklesia is an interesting word in the Greek. It just means outcalled. Outcalled. It's this called out community. It's a named people marked by followership of Jesus as a messianic and eschatological people. And sorry for that big word. It just simply means this is the last expression of God's people. There's not going to be another expression of God's people. This is the beginning of the end. But when Jesus said this, he said it in a very difficult social and psychological context. Socially, he says this in Caesarea Philippi, which was known in the days, you know, sort of in slang, as the most highly pagan society there was. It was about as far from the center of Jewish religion as you could get. Psychologically, this is a tiny band of everyday regular people, sometimes with little or no faith or understanding what Jesus was doing. And so we see here that the Jesus community is comprised of people just like us, as John was talking about himself. The Jesus community is comprised of forgiven sinners who, like Peter, though he's a star in this passage, had Dennis kept reading for about 5 minutes, we would have seen that he becomes somebody who blows it big time. So the community of Jesus is made up of people who precisely need spiritual growth. So despite all its flaws, and despite the flaws of Jesus' first followers, Jesus says, I'm going to build my church on you. And the gates of hell will not prevail against you. And I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom. They and we are the people chosen by God to work with him in putting the world right side up. The keys of the kingdom are meant to unlock the goodness of God in which economics would be a little more just. It was meant to open the goodness of God in which trafficking would be put in its place. These are what the keys of the kingdom are for. They're for friends. What are keys for? If I give you keys to my car, what am I doing? I'm giving you access. Why do you have access to God's kingdom? To be his cooperative friend. What's he up to? He's building this community who will partner with him in bringing in the messianic age. Well, you don't have time to do it this morning, but, you know, I guess we'll do it all during Advent, if you can remember this moment, and we'll rehearse all the messianic promises and the things that were going to happen through God's people when he came. And then Jesus says, and the gates of hell will not prevail against this movement, that this is the last era people of God, and death even will not have victory, and nor shall the death nails of the church's coffin. I'm sure if I met Stephen Hawking, he would be a fascinating human being. But Hawking, Christ. I'm betting my life on Christ. I'm betting my life that even with all the popular new atheists and all the death nails being supposedly nailed into the church's coffin, even through the death of its founder, the martyrdom of the first apostles, the divisions of the early church, the disputes of the early fathers, the crusades, the God is dead philosophers of the 60s, and the new atheists and the antagonistic media of today, it doesn't matter. I'm betting my life on it. I only have one life. And my life is spent, usually marked by time, money, and resources. Time, money, and energy, excuse me. And I can look you in the eye and say, there is nothing else in my life that I give focused time to in terms of my vocation and my work than church. This is why anybody who knows me knows that Holy Trinity is Debbie and I's first love. I know I teach, I know I write books, I know I'm a bishop and all that. Those are not my first loves. This is my first love in terms of my vocation. This is what gets me out of bed in the morning. This is why I do what I do. All those other things are just to earn a living. Right? I got to earn a living somehow. I'm happy to do it. I'm a missionary bishop. I'm a church planner. I get it. I probably should have been doing this at 28 instead of 58, but here I am. And, you know, when you think of that list I just read, the death of its founder, on and on and on, how good and kind of God that we are here today. Right? How good and kind. This is another thing that I'm supposed to be expert on. Do you know that Orange County now has become known as the graveyard for church plants? New little church plants don't make it here because we're so dominated by, you know, everybody's got their campuses around Orange County. It's so dominated by these big brands that's kind of like the Walmartization of the church. Little hardware stores are going out of business. I know you laugh. I get why you're laughing. But on the other hand, I hope you know it's not funny. You can be little and dying, like you can be 100 or 150 year old church, be little and dying and survive in Orange County, but you can't be little and trying to grow. It doesn't work. The economics don't work. There's not enough money to rent buildings. There's not enough money to pay staff. It doesn't work. So how good and kind of God that we're here today. We made it, and we made it through two really tough years. Did you hear your voices this morning? Cindy, did you hear their voices? This is the first time in 2 years I could hear your voices praying. 2 years. I couldn't hear you singing. Cindy couldn't hear you singing, or Travis half the time. And we can hear our voice again. How good and gracious of God that we're here. We made it. Elizabeth gave me a passage to read from Evelyn Underhill this week, and I want to close with this. Underhill's writing on the Spanish mystics and was particularly talking about St. Teresa. And Teresa was a bit of an activist herself. You know, she gets known as this kind of holiness person, and of course she is. But I love this little line that Beth pointed out to me where Teresa said, "No foundation has ever been laid without trouble." Can I just tell you, that's the dang truth. No foundation for a church has ever been laid without trouble. Now, if you know a bit about Teresa, her focus and what she's most famous for is the inner life and her union with God and the prayer and the contemplative work that's necessary to it. But what you may not know is that she was a reformer and a church planner, just like me. And she planted a dozen or more new convents and ministries. She says of herself that she knew ceaseless external tension. And I think she's a bit of an expert when she says no foundation has ever been laid without trouble. And this, I think, is the rhythm to which we are called. This deep commitment to union with God, such that in public it would be good for others. And for me, forming a community of such people is my best sense of my calling. I say this with all love, I hope not an ounce of bragging, but there are a lot of other things I could be doing. I get offered jobs to be head of this or head of that fairly routinely. But I'm betting my life on the church. And I'm betting my life on this church, on Holy Trinity Church in Costa Mesa, a named people in a concretely named place. This is something that my mentor, Eugene Peterson, has banged into me. Todd, if they're not named people, they're not your sheep. And if you're not available to them, this isn't a real relationship. Church only works amongst the named people in a concretely named place. So I'm not abstractly committed to the notion of ecclesia. I'm not abstractly committed to the notion of God having a people that goes back to what we've studied recently in Genesis with Abraham. I'm committed to it in a named way and in a concrete way, in a concrete space. Because becoming like Teresa, the best we can, a people who pursue union with God and loving, serving, communion with others, I just can't think actually of a better way of spending my life. So as we come to the table this morning, to be nourished by our Lord Jesus, the one who said he's building his church, this happens not least through the spiritual life given to us in his broken body and shed blood. So now as I give you a moment of silence, I invite you to take a moment and think about some of the particularities that I've talked about, the particularity of the Lord who's building the church, the particularity of his church, that we're a named people in a named place. And take a moment here to now give yourself to that story.